Russia continues bombarding Ukraine with attacks on its energy infrastructure.
Mainly the areas in the east are suffering because all the attacks in the western part are affecting the whole territory of Ukraine because main generation of energy is coming from the western regions right now.
Plus, how women and girls are helping Ukraine's military make up for a shortfall of soldiers.
First, we had only one platoon of girls cadets. It was a new experience for us. And now we have more than 60 girls cadets.
And later in the program, a Russian court extends the detention of another journalist as Pope Francis in his Easter Sunday Mass calls for the release of all prisoners of war on both sides of the Russia-Ukraine conflict. Today is Monday, April 1st. From the Voice of America, this is Flashpoint Ukraine. Good evening, I'm Lori London. Ukraine's military Monday reported destroying 2 out of 3 Russian drones deployed in overnight attacks. It follows a barrage of strikes across Ukraine over the weekend. Anna Chernikova joins us for an update from Kyiv.
There were additional attacks targeting energy infrastructure, and we can see that all latest attacks by Russian forces are targeting energy infrastructure, and mainly in the western part of Ukraine and in the east as well. Mainly, we're talking about western regions, different areas, but we have reports from Lviv region, where the damage is the most visible, but also Ivano-Frankivsk region and area around. At this point, there is no complete blackout of the system, or there is no complete trouble with energy completely across Ukraine. But mainly the areas in the east are suffering because all the attacks in the western part are affecting the whole territory of Ukraine because main generation of energy is coming from the western regions right now. But also because eastern areas are also under attack, especially Kharkiv and Kharkiv region, they suffer the most and they have the lack of electricity, and there are certain schedules now which are followed in order to make sure that people have energy and people have electricity a couple of hours at least during the day.
Yeah, it looks like considering all the bombardments, Ukraine's energy infrastructure is doing a pretty good job of holding up.
Yes, surprisingly, actually, because for instance, in Kyiv, there are no sign of any problem with electricity. In the western regions, in those regions which were affected, there are some, but not really, not something dramatic. As I said, mostly under the effect are those regions which are near the front line.
And Anna, I understand Ukraine recently did mark a milestone that was actually one of its successes.
Yes, you're right. Over the weekend, Ukraine marked a second anniversary since the liberation of Kyiv region from Russian occupation, especially for Kyiv citizens and those who live in the outskirts of Kyiv. It was a really important memorial because still it's very fresh memory of the period when people had to evacuate and then come back, partly destroyed outskirts of Kyiv. And when those areas were liberated, the whole world saw the images of the atrocities and war crimes that was later approved by the international experts as war crimes in Bucha, for instance, and in Irpin and other cities and villages in the Kyiv region. So President Zelensky made a speech, of course, marking this second year, and everyone were talking about what Kyiv region is up to right now and what is the situation with rebuilding. So a lot of works are still ongoing.
And what's the latest on the strategy going forward, given the challenges Ukraine now faces without, at least for now, U.S. aid coming in?
Just recently, President Zelensky announced that Ukraine is preparing for a new Russian assault, and from the Institute for the Study of War latest report that actually looks like Russian forces are increasing and will increase their actions in the Luhansk and Donetsk regions. This region is considered as one of the main for Russian new assault, also by the Ukrainian officials, but Ukrainian officials also say that Russian forces can try to attack from other directions and may maybe even in the direction of Kyiv again from the north. So Ukraine is preparing across the whole border area, actually. And President Zelensky also recently visited Sumy region, which is in the north part. And also there are reports from other areas which are bordering Russia. And we can see footage also from the official sources of the local authorities that Ukraine is preparing certain fortifications and defense lines in case Russian forces will continue their assault, increase their assault in other areas. And also the mayor of Kyiv just over the weekend announced that Kyiv is also getting ready for possible a new assault, and that Kyiv should be stronger than it was 2 years ago. So, so this is probably the main concern right now, that Russia can actually start certain actions in other direction except of Donetsk region.
All right. Thank you so much for the update. Anna Chernikova reporting for us from Kyiv.
Meanwhile, Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky dismissed a longtime aide and several advisors Saturday in a continuing reshuffle as Kyiv prepares for another major Russian assault. The U.S. Congress left Washington for a break without deciding on a supplemental funding bill to arm Ukraine and other allies. Republicans who oppose the funding say Congress should spend its money on domestic concerns. But as VOA Pentagon correspondent Carla Babb reports, the funding bill hits closer to home than many Americans may realize.
As Ukraine blames ammunition shortages for recent territorial losses, the Republican-led U.S. House of Representatives has failed to throw Kyiv a lifeline, refusing to bring a vote on a Senate-passed emergency spending bill with $60 billion to support Ukraine. Republican Representative Scott Perry of Pennsylvania.
Nobody agrees with what Putin's done. But when we're taking our hard-earned tax dollars and sending them 5,000 miles away without any end in sight, meanwhile, our borders wide open and our American citizens are being murdered on their streets, that's a problem.
But most of the funds lawmakers have approved to arm Ukraine aren't going directly there. They're being spent here in the United States in plants like the BAE Systems plant in York, Pennsylvania, in the congressman's district, to build new weapons and to replace the old weapons sent to Kyiv from U.S. stockpiles. The York plant is one of dozens of defense industrial facilities injected with congressional funds in support of Ukraine's fight. Mackenzie Eaglin, a senior fellow at American Enterprise Institute, says the York plant is one of dozens of defense industrial facilities injected with congressional funds in support of Ukraine's fight.
And those facilities range from, you know, private factories to government laboratories to ammunition plants that are, you know, World War I or World War II era that are desperately in need of modernization.
Here, steel rods are molded in the fiery Scranton furnaces, forged into 155-millimeter artillery round shells. The shells are cooled, inspected, and painted to prevent rusting before they're shipped off to be packed with explosives. Northeast Pennsylvania production has doubled from 14,000 155-millimeter shells per month at the start of the Ukraine war to 28,000 per month today. And plant contractor General Dynamics says that number will jump to 36,000 per month when a new production line in a nearby plant goes live in a few weeks.
This is one complete production line infrastructure that you're looking at.
Rich Hansen, who oversees the plant for the Army, says $418 million in taxpayer dollars are funding 20 modernization projects here.
The money's going into repairing roofs, repairing floors. You can see this is a brand new floor. It was installed about a month ago. And this is in preparation to install new production lines at the employee levels. Certainly it has increased. And I believe that GD said that it will continue to increase to match the production lines that we install.
200 more new jobs at this plant alone. But a General Dynamics official tells VOA those jobs won't come without increased funding from Congress. And Congressman Matt Cartwright says those jobs will make a difference in places like Scranton.
It's a big shot in the arm. I mean, Scranton, northeastern Pennsylvania, has kind of been bumping along economically. It's really why I ran for Congress in the first place. These are not just dedicated employees, they are patriotic employees, and they're thinking about the people that they're protecting and the democracy that they're protecting.
But while the jobs are important, what's more important, he says, is making sure the U.S. doesn't turn its back on Ukraine.
Not only is it un-American, I'm here to tell you it's un-Pennsylvanian, okay? We have never run from a fight. We have always stood up for democracy and freedom wherever it exists. And I don't think we should change that policy now.
The Army says it needs to produce 100,000 155 rounds per month starting in 2025 to replenish the more than 2 million rounds the U.S. has sent to Ukraine and to keep giving Kyiv enough rounds to defend itself. The U.S. defense industry won't reach that goal, defense officials say, without supplemental funding from Congress. Carla Babb, VOA News, Scranton, Pennsylvania.
France's defense minister says his country will deliver hundreds of armored vehicles to Ukraine by the beginning of next year. Associated Press correspondent Lawrence Brooks reports.
It comes as part of a new package of military aid for the country that just entered its third year since the Russian invasion. In an interview with a French newspaper, Sébastien Lecornu said Ukraine's army needs armored personnel carriers for troop mobility and to hold an extensive front line. France will be sending Ukraine its old VAB armored personnel carriers that started being used in 1979, as they plan to replace them with a new generation of armored vehicles. Lecornu adds France will also provide Ukraine with more anti-aircraft missiles. The move comes as France's government is pushing its military industry to boost its production to meet Kyiv's urgent needs for ammunition. I'm Lawrence Brooks.
Meanwhile, U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken is in Europe for discussions on a wide range of issues, including support for Ukraine in its battle against Russia's invasion. VOA's senior diplomatic correspondent Cindy Sain reports.
Secretary Blinken will travel to Paris, France, and Brussels and Leuven, Belgium, April 1st to 5th to underscore our commitment to the NATO alliance, strengthening transatlantic partnerships, and addressing global challenges. In Paris, Secretary Blinken will meet with French President Macron to discuss support for Ukraine, efforts to prevent escalation of the conflict in Gaza, and a number of other important issues.
French President Emmanuel Macron stirred up a controversy last month by saying that it is imperative that Russia be defeated and that it should not be ruled out that the West may need to send ground troops into Ukraine, a suggestion the U.S. and Germany swiftly rejected. One expert told VOA that he believes Macron was expressing the view, often expressed by the U.S., that all options are possible, without meaning troops would be deployed in Ukraine anytime soon. Ian Lesser is vice president of the German Marshall Fund of the United States, based in Brussels. He spoke to VOA via Zoom.
I mean, we're in a tougher moment in terms of the war in Ukraine, and it is imposing new challenges and new risks for escalation. In some ways, the United States and France are the most outspoken and the most forward-leaning on the question of support for Ukraine across the Atlantic. So there's every reason for us to be on the same page, but I think that meeting with President Macron will certainly be very important to codify that.
Meanwhile, Blinken will head to Europe next week as outrage there and elsewhere grows over the suffering of Palestinian civilians in Gaza due to Israel's war against the U.S.-designated terrorist group Hamas. Another expert told VOA that in Paris and Brussels, Blinken will likely face the complex task of having to listen to and reassure allies while maintaining support for Israel's right to defend itself. Michael Kimmage is a professor of history at the Catholic University of America. He spoke to VOA via Zoom.
He's going to have to articulate strong support for Israel. I think Biden has been unambiguous on that point, but at the same time be sensitive to some of the concerns that Europeans have in particular about Israel going too far or Israel not having a long-term strategy or of Israel engaging in human rights abuses in Gaza.
Another discussion top for Blinken and his counterparts is likely to be the terrorist threat posed by the Islamic State group, which claimed responsibility for the attack last week on a concert in Moscow. The U.S. dismissed as propaganda charges by Russian officials that Ukraine was involved in the attack. Cindy Sain, VOA News.
You're listening to VOA's Flashpoint Ukraine. I'm Lori London. A court in Russia on Monday ordered a detained Russian-American journalist to be held in jail for 2 more months pending investigation and trial. Alsu Karmasheva, an editor for the U.S. government-funded Radio Free Europe Radio Liberty, told reporters in the courtroom that she wasn't doing very well physically as some of her medical conditions had flared up in detention. Karmasheva was taken into custody on October 18th and charged with failing to register as a foreign agent. She was later also charged with spreading false information about the Russian military. She could face up to 15 years in prison if convicted. Meanwhile, Karmasheva's situation is similar to that of Wall Street Journal reporter Evan Gershkovich, who on Friday marked 1 year of being behind bars following his arrest by Russian authorities. After the fifth extension of his detention last week, U.S. Ambassador Lynn Tracy said Russia is using American citizens as pawns to achieve political ends.
The accusations against Evan are categorically untrue. They are not a different interpretation of circumstances. They are fiction.
Russia has accused Gershkovich of espionage without offering evidence to support the charge. Meanwhile, when Russia imposed harsh laws on reporters covering its invasion of Ukraine, dozens of them fled. But physical distance doesn't always keep exiled journalists safe, as we hear from Steve Baragona, who narrates this story by Liam Scott in Berlin.
Another country, another new home for Ekaterina Fomina. The Russian journalist has lived in 3 countries and 7 apartments in 2 years, an attempt to escape Moscow's reach. But distance doesn't always mean safety.
You steal a hostage in their hands because they can influence on your life. They can prosecute you even without you being there.
As Russian bombs fell on Ukraine's capital, Kyiv, Moscow moved to impose tough laws for media reporting on its invasion. With those laws come hefty prison terms, as Fomina found. In this story, a Russian soldier tells Fomina he killed a Ukrainian civilian. The coverage led to Russian authorities investigating her for spreading false information about the army. If convicted, she could be jailed for 10 years. The legal harassment is just one of the difficulties that come with living and working in exile. Even outside Russia, Fomina won't publicly say where she is. She's wary of the surveillance and physical attacks other exiles face.
After these 2 years, you simply realize that there is no country and no place in the world there you belong to.
In Berlin, the JX Fund supports journalists in exile. It's seeing cases in Germany and across Europe of legal harassment, threats to family back home, and in extreme cases, even poisonings. Managing director Penelope Winterhager suspects the Russian government.
They don't want them to report anymore. They want to frighten them. And, you know, if people break into your apartment, if poisonings are happening, if you can only walk around with a bodyguard, this does make you afraid after a while.
Berlin-based Katerina Abramova heads communications for Russian outlet Medusa. She says Moscow has long used these tactics.
It's an illusion that when you're not in Russia, you are absolutely safe.
Her team has seen cyber attacks, hacking attempts, and their website blocked.
Freedom of information in general is getting worse and worse, and it's always like catch me if you can game, how to bypass blockades.
Neither the Russian embassy in Berlin nor Russia's foreign ministry responded to VOA's requests for comment. For Fomina, the constant instability and isolation takes a toll.
Technically, I live abroad, but psychologically, I live somewhere in between Russia and Ukraine and probably on the battlefield.
She finds comfort in her rescue dog, Cooper, and that her reporting on the aftermath of Russia's 22 invasion of Ukraine is contributing to a better future. But trauma leaves its mark.
My feelings are frozen and my life, my personal life, put on hold because my life just stopped the air on 24th of February, 2022.
Casting a further shadow is the death in prison of Russian opposition leader Alexei Navalny. His case underscores the sacrifices of those who stand up to Putin, no matter the cost. For Liam Scott in Berlin, Steve Barragona, VOA News.
Uno scambio generale di tutti I prigionieri tra Russia e Ucraina.
Despite recent health problems, Pope Francis presided over Easter Sunday Mass in St. Peter's Square. He called for the release of prisoners of war on both sides of the Russia-Ukraine war. More than 2 years into Russia's invasion, Ukraine faces shortages of not only ammunition, but also soldiers. In response, more Ukrainian women are enlisting in the armed forces, and girls are choosing to pursue training to become military officers. Miroslava Gungadze has the story from the Ivan Bohun Military Lyceum in Kyiv.
For years, only boys could get a military education at the Ivan Bohun Military Lyceum in Kyiv, Ukraine, the alma mater of the country's top Ukrainian military officers. In recent years, however, more girls have joined this elite high school to receive officers' training. As the demands of war increased in Ukraine, the school started a joint program for boys and girls. Lyceum Deputy Commander Dmitro Yarmolenko says that including girls has improved the learning environment.
First, we had only one platoon of girl cadets. It was a new experience for us. And now we have more than 60 cadets. Girls cadets, they are very smart and always ready for the new problems, new types of education.
Before the war, positions of women in the army were limited. Now, Yarmolenko says, women can serve in a variety of military roles.
As the commanders of the troops of special forces, paratroopers, more and more position.
The Lyceum has been accepting an increasing number of girls every year. Girls and boys here study and train together, competing with one another daily. Lisa Bahni excels in arm wrestling competitions and in the boxing ring. A former athlete, she chose to pursue a military education.
I love Ukraine and I want to defend it. I want to be a military officer of the Ukrainian army. I won't go to front line. After my studying, I will go.
Bahni's classmate, Bohdana Ternopih, gave us a tour of a girl's quarter, where she learned to keep her things tight and in order. Her brother is fighting on the front line, she says. Her parents supported her decision to apply to military lyceum. She wants to serve her country now that the Ukrainian army has more opportunities for women. She says if you look at 2010-2014, the culture positively changed. Before, men did not accept women in the army. Women used to be cooks, operators, or drivers. Now, there are more women, she says. They are the snipers and gunners. In general, women can choose any fighting role. Captain Svetlana Shemchuk, lyceum educator and overseer of the girls' program, relocated to Kyiv after Russia annexed Crimea in 2014. She, too, has noticed that the Ukrainian armed forces is now offering women more opportunities. She says what changed is girls got gender equality. Girls can do everything. They are more patient, smarter, and more independent than the boys, she adds. And they are even more resilient. According to the Ukrainian Defense Ministry, as of 2024, over 45,000 women were serving in Ukraine's armed forces. While most are in supportive roles, over 4,000 are fighting in the combat zone, showing that Ukrainian women are prepared to endure the hardship of the war in defense of their country. Miroslava Gungadze, VOA News, Kyiv, Ukraine.
And that'll do it for us today. Stay up to date with continuing coverage on Ukraine and news from around the world 24 hours a day at voanews.com. And on social media, be sure and follow VOA News. On behalf of all of us here at VOA, thanks so much for listening. Until next time, I'm Lori London.